Shedeur Sanders has an oblique injury. What it means for Saturday and what it means for week one for the Browns. What would it cost to get Micah Parsons from Jerry Jones? And does Jerry already know he has a deal? Plus, don't hit Joe Burrow. Inside coverage is next. I'm just a man in a hotel room near a training camp. My name is Andrew Siciliano, thrilled and honored and flattered to be here with you and a great team of Yahoo NFL reporters each and every night, 6:30 Eastern time, a time that if I look at my clock right now and I look out the window here in Philadelphia, kind of sort of overlaps with happy hour. We'll make this your happy hour every single night. Football coverage, Frank Schwab, it's not as late there in Colorado, but we'll call it a happy hour. Charles Robinson and gentlemen, it is great to see you both. And Frank, I'm assuming right around now you're going to TaylorSwift.com to figure out when the album's going to drop.
Actually, I felt like I should check into a hotel just to fit in with the group. Like I'm just sitting at home like you normal. Could. You guys are living it up on the road.
Solidarity. Come on, Frank.
Yeah. I want to let you guys know this is as clean as any bed will ever appear behind me.
Did you make the bed, Charles, for this shot?
I checked in and immediately sat down for the show. So that's it. This is as good as it's ever going to get.
I could have answered that. The answer was no. The answer was Charles was not making a bed for anybody.
Listen, the key too is if you're going to do shows back to back, as we will, I'll be on tomorrow as well. You get two queens so that all you have to do is shift the shot to the one that's still made tomorrow.
There you go.
Although, on the there you okay, go. Madison, you can't put up the wide shot, though. That ruins it tomorrow. That's
a problem. That is a veteran. That is a veteran reporter training camp move right there. Well done. I'll be honest with you. I have moved a lot of furniture around this hotel room. I almost, as I told you earlier, tried to take the television off the wall. You can't see that behind me. So I could hardwire into the internet in the cable box back there. Alas, I couldn't do it. The cable's not long enough regardless. So I have moved furniture. I've got a tripod and lighting set up, and I already have the do not disturb. And I am paranoid that they're going to ignore the do not disturb and move the tripod and all the furniture back to where they should be tomorrow. And I'm anxious, I'll be honest with you. So it's day by day, one day at a time. We're trying to stack days in training camp and make sure that the tripod stays stacked where it is.
So it's Motley Crue and Andrew Siciliano ripping TVs off walls and hotel rooms.
There you go. Yes. Except mine was sober with not any fun intended. Had fun today, however. Let's get to the football. I'm in Philadelphia. Charles, again, you're in Jacksonville. Had fun today here at Browns-Eagles joint practice. About an hour before that practice was about to get going, there was a line down the street in South Philly to get in, to see the Eagles, to see the Browns. It's a two-day joint practice before the game coming up. Should be humid and steamy and awful at 1 p.m. Eastern time at the Link, a matinee on Saturday. The defense won the day on both sides, on both fields. Browns defense looked good. Eagles really had one over the top play, like Johnny Wilson beating Cam Mitchell early in practice. That was it. And then honestly, the Eagles defense looked good as well against the Browns offense that got a little bit of room in the run game, but not a lot of pass plays or chunks or explosives to write home about. Joe Flacco, a couple of nice balls to Jerry Jeudy, Dylan Gabriel to undrafted rookie free agent Gage Lardavan. That was pretty much it. I'm burying the lead. The headline is Shedeur Sanders did not practice and his status for Saturday is very much in doubt. It is an oblique injury. And while I am not here in any way to speculate on injuries, that is rule number one. You do not speculate on injuries. Generally speaking, oblique injuries, you don't play that week. And there he is. And this is video from Nick Camino, which is WKYC, Channel 3 NBC in Cleveland. And this is the only video that really anyone has of Shedeur looking uncomfortable. This was during one-on-one drills. Sanders was working with the tight ends far away from where the other quarterbacks were working with wide receivers near the NovaCare locker rooms and where all the fans and where the media was assembled. And all of us kept asking, why isn't Shedeur down here and why is Tyler Huntley working in doing one-on-ones as the third quarterback. Love Tyler Huntley and love that Snoop got off the couch and was able to play in the fourth quarter last week in Carolina, but Shedeur Sanders should be part of those one-on-ones. He was not, guys, part of those one-on-ones. As it stands right now, if Dylan Gabriel can go, and he did do 11-on-11 work today, now the hammy feels tomorrow, it would be Gabriel for what I'm guessing to be the same formula as last week, maybe three quarters, maybe a half. And then, Frank, it is Snoop Huntley time, and who knows when Shedeur Sanders could be back.
And that's the thing. At this point, you start thinking about, okay, well, the preseason is going to be over in about, what, 12 days? Yeah. Is Shedeur Sanders really going to be healthy for their final preseason game? I doubt it. Oblique injuries are kind of nothing to mess with. And then you think about just the context of where he is on this team. As well as he played last week, and as many people as watched him talk about it and raved about it, he was good. There's no indication he's not fourth on the depth chart still. Now he has basically no chance to move up. Other guys might move down. Dylan Gabriel could go out in this preseason game and struggle mightily, and it just kind of moves down that way, and Sanders moves up. But as far as just reps go, this might be the last. We might have watched the only time we're going to see Shedeur Sanders on an NFL field this entire season, if you think about it. Like, there's no guarantee he plays in a regular season. There's certainly now no guarantee he plays the rest of the preseason. It's going to be hard for him to move up the depth chart. This was a bad, bad injury for Shedeur. Just horrible timing for him coming off of the positive preseason debut. You just wonder what this means for him in the context of where he starts the season on the depth chart when he gets his next chance. As fortunate as he was last week to kind of get this start and do really, really well with it, the bad fortune happened now. This is a really, really tough injury for him. A pretty big setback for him.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, you know, from an exhibition rep standpoint, not ideal at all for him, right? You know, this is his opportunity to plant a seed. And I think that's one, to me, part of the Shedeur story here is everything he does in the preseason right now is not necessarily aimed at getting him moving up the depth chart. Like, when I talked to Kevin Stefanski about this, it was very much geared toward, is he going to plant a seed? Is he going to do something that when we get into the season and we start to make, you know, decisions down the line, whether it's there's injuries with quarterbacks, sometimes it's just the way the schedule plays out. If suddenly you're, you know, sitting in November and you're feeling like you're falling out of playoff contention and you're starting to make decisions for the future, has Shedeur done enough in the preseason to say to you, we need to get a look at him in a regular season game now at this point? I think they want to feel that way, both from a Dylan Gabriel standpoint and a Shedeur Sanders standpoint. You want to have both rookies plant a seed that open up an opportunity later down the line where if you're making decisions, it keeps them in the equation. I will say this, although it's not ideal for Shedeur, I wonder if this might be somewhat ideal for the Browns from the standpoint of getting an unobstructed look at Dylan Gabriel. Because I truly believe if you put Dylan Gabriel in a game with Shedeur Sanders right now, you're going to have Browns fans who want to see Shedeur Sanders on the field. That's nothing against Dylan Gabriel. Andrew, you and I were in Carolina. I was stunned when I was walking into that stadium how many Colorado Buffalo fans were there, how many Cleveland Brown fans were there. It was stunning to me how many people had showed out to this game in Carolina, North Carolina, to see Shedeur Sanders play. So in a way, I will say this. I think it takes Shedeur out of the mix, at least for one game here, it looks like. And it gives him the chance, if he's healthy, to get a look at Dylan Gabriel without having to worry about, well, when can we get Shedeur in this game as well?
No one's writing Shedeur off for the season in any way at all. At all. But I think the headline here has to be, and I think the headline truly, Frank, was, even before today, Joe Flacco is going to be your starting quarterback, barring something highly unforeseen week one.
Yeah, it has to be Flacco now. I mean, nobody else has been healthy enough to really make a move on him. So, and, you know, if this was a normal quarterback competition, this would all be important, all these moving parts. If Flacco's going to start, Kenny Pickett probably has to prove something. He hasn't been on the field a lot. You got to do something, right? Like, this is a team that could keep four quarterbacks or maybe doesn't. We don't know. It's not like the Browns have a ton invested in him, so who knows? Dylan Gabriel was a third-round pick. They want to get a good look at him to see kind of, can we put him in a game if we have to? But it just all comes back to Shedeur because it's this weird phenomenon we've never seen before from a fifth-round rookie. But yes, all this other stuff is interesting. I've never wondered that Flacco's going to be the starter. Of course he is. Like, every indication is they're going to start Flacco week one. It's just when you look at these first six games, you realize really quickly that the Browns could be 0-6 at the end of it. 1-5, I don't even think would be that bad, honestly, for them. That's how tough their first six games are. What happens after that? What happens if they say, okay, we have to go to a new quarterback, and that quarterback is, who is it? That's what I was trying to figure out in this August. And for Shadur fans of the many, Charles, as you talked about, they were, oh yeah, of course it's going to be him. Well, now his chances of getting that spot are really set back. Like you said, did he plant a seed? I don't know that you could do that in just a half a preseason football.
Well, yeah, I mean, we won't know that now. I mean, it's the planting the seed was the expanse of the preseason, the exhibition games, you know, when they were going into full squad minicamp, and I had a chance to talk to somebody inside the organization, the way it was described to me was, you know, look, he's fourth on the depth chart. Here's the ground he needs to make up. You know, there's verbiage issues right now with him. There's NFL terminology issues. There's just basic NFL quarterbacking where he's a little bit behind the curve. And from what I had understood coming out of that Carolina game, I had a chance to catch somebody on the way to the bus. And what I was told was he's made strides. That already they have seen him make sizable strides in those areas. And now you take that off the table a little bit, at least in terms of the live repping of it, right? Not so much the classroom work. Look, it's a downer. But I think if you asked Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry at the start, you know, construct how this season should go, if they were being honest and just openly talking, you're going to start a veteran quarterback against that schedule, right? You're going to start someone who's proven he can move that offense under Kevin Stefanski, and you're going to give the team the best chance to win and see where it goes. To me, that's always Flacco in the saddle when we kick off in September, and then you kind of see how things unfold. It's a brutal schedule. What's going to happen with Quinshon Judkins? There are other things hanging over this team right now, but I think had the brass been able to just sit down and say, look, ideally, yes, we drafted two rookie quarterbacks. We don't want to start those guys. That's not how we want to move forward with this. We want to go out there with a veteran who we know can move this offense and give us our best shot. And then we will adjust as we go if we have to.
You're right. The schedule, it's got to be a veteran quarterback. It was always, barring something just stunningly unforeseen, a Russell Wilson-like, wow, how do we keep this kid on the bench kind of performance from either of the rookies? It was always going to be a veteran. But Shadur gave us that taste, and he proved that he could play on Friday, and everybody wanted more. And we're not going to get it, likely at least not this week. And get ready for Joe Flacco and Joe Burrow. By the way, Joe Flacco, Joe Burrow, week one on September 7th in Cleveland, where the Bengals did win last year, but in years past, the Browns, especially like go back to 23, have had Joe Burrow's number. That's a fun game. That's a fun game, week one.
And Burrow, I mean,
Flacco's going to be slinging
game.
It. Come on.
There's like a million good games in week one. That's the one I'm going to be like, okay. Yeah,
first
I'm
of
not
all,
watching Joe
Frank,
Flacco.
Frank, every yes. game week one is a good game. Okay.
It is. I will
because
agree
you,
with that.
And I truly actually, do yes. mean this. You have no yeah. idea what's going to happen week one.
He already reversed. That's it. It just took one stern word from Andrew Siciliano, and Frank immediately reversed.
See, I won't argue with Andrew yet. I'll argue with you, Charles.
Yeah, you could argue.
All
you
we
want.
Know
I'm
that.
Here. I'm here for the argument. God.
Week one's great. I love week one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even Denver, Tennessee. Sure. Why not? Sign me up. But yeah, I'm not sitting here a month away going like, ooh, I get to see Joe Flacco play football in week one. So I'll throw a little
you know
cold
what?
Water on that one.
You know what? You wait till he. He has a stretch handoff, play fake, pulls it back, turns around, and hits Jerry Jeudy on a deep crosser. He gets to the sideline, and he's going 70 yards, and then they have the
it
shot
could happen
at Al
against
Golden
that Bengals
on the sideline.
Defense. I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
the
I mean,
Bengals do.
Yeah, come on. Come on, guys. I'm telling you that game is going to be fun. I am going to speak it into existence.
And again, you're right, against that Bengals defense. It could be a game in the 40s, let's be honest. I mean, that's how bad the Bengals defense is. And
that look, they did not look good.
The thing about Flacco, too, is, I mean, do we forget that when – I'll never forget when he stepped in as a starter, all of a sudden I was like, wow, Kevin Stefanski's offense got really vertical all of a sudden. Amari Cooper is catching balls downfield. David Njoku's come alive. I'm like, this entire offense is scoring points. Now, granted, he's probably going to make a couple big Flacco mistakes. I listen. I don't like the fact that a lot of the Shedeur conversation has been focused in a way where some people almost act like the Browns are just this destitute team, right? Like they got talented veterans. They can go out and win football games.
The defense will be so much better this year. That.
Yes, absolutely. You don't want to prioritize. I'm sorry. You don't want to prioritize a fifth round Shedeur Sanders over winning games for your veteran players. And by the way, didn't Myles Garrett just make that clear in the offseason to the Browns? He feels like his prime is getting wasted, and I can't argue that. So don't go out there with the aim of starting anybody but the guy who gives you the best chance to win at the start of the season, and that's Joe Flacco. Now, if it takes a left turn, then you deal with it then. But you don't go into it thinking, how can we get Shedeur as high up the depth chart as possible? That was never the goal.
But that left turn is like NASCAR, Charles. It's coming, and it's coming. There's no way around that left turn. It's going to happen to the Browns. Like, if you guys want to make an inside coverage bet on the over-under for the Browns wins, I got y'all. Like, yeah, I'll take the under. Team's not going to be good. It's just
Jimmy Haslam said a couple of weeks ago that, yes, at one point, you have to see the rookies this year. Everyone knows that is the case. They're going to try to win some games, however, before they get there. And today, both Myles Garrett and Carson Schwesinger, beginner rookies, living in the backfield against a very good Philadelphia offensive line. He is also the real deal. James Cook coming up next. He can now build a new kitchen. 4 years, 48, 30 guaranteed. We'll tell you how it got done and what the real money is in this deal. Charles Robinson, Frank Schwab, Andrew Siciliano, inside coverage on Yahoo. You saw a little bit last night on Hard Knocks, a little bit of tension and frustration there between the Bills and James Cook as he dressed last week for the Bills preseason opener, but would not actually play. Now he is going to play because James Cook has a brand new contract. He gets it done. It's 4 years and $48 million, roughly $30 million guaranteed. This is Inside Coverage, the how and why. You're watching Yahoo. I'm Andrew Siciliano, Frank Schwab, Charles Robinson with me. Looking at the numbers here that Mike Florio put up in Pro Football Talk, he was due to make roughly what? Oh, that's the Kyren Williams deal I'm looking at. I beg your pardon, not the James Cook deal. Either way, it's $30 million guaranteed, and they got the deal done, and they are ready to go. And this, Frank, is paying a guy who, A, deserved to get paid, but paying a guy after Brandon Bean handed out a lot of money in the offseason. You re-sign Rousseau. You re-sign Benford. You bring in Nick Bosa. You re-sign Josh Allen. You pay the guys to go win the championship. Even though you don't want to pay running backs, generally speaking, this deal kind of comes in near the Kyren Williams deal, although it is a little bit more. It feels right. You keep your player happy, and you say it's time to go win.
And I really think the fact that the Bills are in the Super Bowl window put some pressure on Brandon to get that deal done, because you can't just play hardball with James Cook and he sits out games or you trade him or whatever. I don't know that the Bills really wanted to pay him this much money. It's an interesting case. He's a guy who only played 48% of the snaps last year. Like, this isn't Kyren Williams on the field the whole time, right? And James Cook gets paid more than that. He had the huge touchdown number last year. Well, okay, that fluctuates a lot. If you play fantasy football, you know running back touchdowns fluctuate from year to year. So has James Cook really put himself in that tier of right below Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry, them? I don't really know if that's the case. But what are you going to do? Are you going to play hardball with this guy right before you're trying to chase a Super Bowl? Like, they had to make him happy somehow. They had to pay him. He got a nice payday. He really did. That is a lot of guaranteed money for any running back. So, I mean, the Bills make their guy happy, but it never really seemed from the outside like they wanted to pay him this much money. I don't know. Maybe I'm totally misreading that, Charles. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, look, I think in terms of the money, teams don't want to pay running backs, right? Unless they're Saquon Barkley. I mean, you have to be a top two or three guy in the league for a team really to want to pay you. I think the reason why the Bills did want to get this done is because we're going to see their offense. This will take it as a tack on. I think ultimately what we're going to find out is it's basically a 2-year deal tacked on beyond 2025. So it's going to get him through 2026. It's going to get him through 2027. It'll get James Cook beyond his 28th birthday, then they can make a decision about where he's at health-wise from an effectiveness standpoint. But I also think they know as they continue to move forward with Josh Allen, they have to continue to make sure they can run the football in a way that does not involve Josh Allen running the football. And we saw Cook, once he turned a corner in the franchise, was a huge tool that they could use to take some of that running burden off of Josh Allen. What I think was funny about this, though, when I saw the deal ultimately get signed and the front office comes out and says, well, you know, he got back on the practice field for us, and that kind of helped us break through. Just so people understand this, anytime you're in a negotiation, I won't say anytime, but a lot of times these front offices are in negotiations with players. They feel like it's going to get done. Maybe the player has been a hold-in and has kept himself out of practices. You don't want to see the player return to practice after he signs the deal, because if you're the front office, it now looks like in the locker room, well, look what he did. He held in, mm-hmm. he accomplished his goal, he signed his deal, and now he's back on the field. So what you do is you get the deal done, you go, hey, all right, let's just not announce it yet. We'll wait a day or two to announce this. We'll get you back on the practice field. And what it'll ultimately end up looking like is, hey, you took one for the team, you came in, it was all about the team, it was about getting back out there with the guys, and that helped us break through from a contract standpoint, and it gave us some momentum. I think that is really ultimately what happened here. And I've seen it go the opposite way. When the Jets traded for Hassan Reddick and they wanted to do that deal with him, the Jets asked him to come and practice so they could, make it look like, hey, this is a good faith, negotiation going on right now. The guy's in the building, he's on the field, he's practicing. And instead, Hassan Reddick was like, nope, I will show up once we do a new deal. And then it went completely off the tracks from there. But I just thought it was interesting that the Bills are portraying this as, man, we just really weren't getting there. And then he came in and he practiced, and there you go. That's what I really mean,
Charles, how much has this hurt the 49ers through the years? They have all these guys hold out, whatever it is, and then they pay them.
It reflects.
All of a sudden, Juwan Jennings is like, I have a calf injury. Like, sure, whatever. Yeah. We all know what's going on here.
Well, see, and it's funny because Stephen Jones, I remember when they were doing the Zach Martin deal, and at one point I was talking to Stephen Jones and he said, the one thing about when you start handing out money, the line gets longer, it doesn't get shorter. He's like, that's true. Like, and so how you hand out the money, it matters. If it looks like someone is accomplishing something from a hold-in standpoint, and we'll talk about this, I think, when we get to Terry McLaurin and the Washington Commanders, but it matters if it appears contentious and a guy is holding in and then you do the deal. And it looks like in the locker room, they won. Like, hey, they used this leverage that they had. They backed you into a corner. And as a team, you ultimately ended up, caving here. So some of this is optics to how it sort of unfolds. I think this was a deal that was done a few days ago.
Doing some work here for Hard Knocks as well in NFL Films, a pod with them. And I can tell you, obviously, for those who watched it last night, there was didn't see it in episode one. At episode two, you see, Brandon Bean talking about James Cook. You see James Cook and the hold, and you have that story told. I kind of got a feeling that deal was coming last night, Charles, to your point. I'm like, please don't drop before the episode. Please don't drop before the episode. And it didn't drop until this morning. And look, remember, they drafted Ray Davis last year as well. So good organizations are always drafting running backs, always keeping another car in the garage. Hate to make guys, compare them to cars, but sometimes with running backs, there's only so many miles you can get on a car. Ray Davis is waiting in the wings after a very good college career, a lot of carries in that college career. And Ty Johnson was great last year on third down as well. So the Bills have their running back room pretty much identical to last year. They get those guys back. And now, as I mentioned, it's time to win. Charles, you mentioned Terry McLaurin. Also time to win there in Washington. They have their window, a quarterback on a rookie contract. Terry McLaurin, I grew up there, full disclosure. I love the guy. He's been the face of the franchise through a very dark period here. He has transitioned to a new era and a reawakening of that fan base and that franchise and that region. I'm going to put personal emotion into this, think that he deserves to get paid. I also understand that when you're turning 30 and you want a contract in the realm of 30, that Adam Peters probably doesn't want to do it. So, Charles, where are they?
Yeah, I think it was interesting to me because when I went in my mind, I'm like, is this really as bad as it sounded in some moments here. Are they really in that tough of a spot? And yeah, they are. And I think what happened, the way I understand it is, you know, when negotiations first opened, I think the Commanders were a little stunned by initially what Terry McLaurin and his camp were really gunning for in those negotiations. I mean, we're talking like,
what does he want? Do we know? 32?
So I think everyone's being careful about not saying what the initial number was, but I will say it was what the initial number was high enough that it almost completely broke down conversation instantaneously between the two parties. Like, I think the Commanders were stunned at initially what the ask was. And to me, the inference is this was like nearly top tier one money. So are we talking 35 million annual average value? Are we talking, you know, beyond 35? Are we talking creeping up to 40? Like, what was the initial ask? I think as things moved for both sides, I think we got to this point of the DK Metcalf contract and the $33 million a year, the $60 plus million guaranteed. And to me, I think the Commanders have approached this from the standpoint of looking at the metrics of receivers who are going to be playing in their 30th year. What kind of contracts have those players signed other than Tyreek Hill, right? Signing a deal in the 30th year. Davante Adams signing a deal that took him into the 30th year of when he landed with the Raiders. You do not have players signing anything above like $23 million annual average values. There's just not a lot of receivers who ever have done that, maxed out beyond $23 million in annual average value, which affects the guaranteed money. So you have Adam Peters and you have the Washington Commanders sitting there staring at this, and they're going, we want to pay you more, right? We're effectively looking at you and we're saying you're making about $23 million a year right now. We are willing to pay you more than that. We don't know that we can get you to 33, right? We don't know that we can get you. We feel like that is still an astronomical ask. So where does this settle out? In my mind, when I look at this and I listen to the principals, I think you fall somewhere in this territory where I think if it can get to $27 million to $28 million in annual average value, if you're getting 50 to, you know, somewhere between $50 and $60 million in guaranteed money, I don't think either side will be happy, but I think it is the middle ground that I think gets, you know, those two sides together. But I had one executive when I was kind of, you know, going through my paces, and I reached out to somebody who knew Adam Peters really well. And I said, you know, what do you think of this situation? And he said, I think people are going to find out a lot about Adam Peters right now because I do not like negotiating with him. He has an edge to him that people, I think, don't necessarily understand. And they're going to see that now in this negotiation. And I think they have in some respects, because Adam Peters has been pretty clear. He's not going to budge.
This is really interesting. I wonder, I want to pitch it right back to you, Charles, because I have a question. But first, the Commanders are losing a lot of the momentum from last year. I mean, let's say this drags on. Terry McLaurin, you might not be up to speed till week three, week four, whatever.
Yeah, it matters.
It's not easy to get in football shape, right? Like, this is tough. But the other thing I'm thinking is, and I want to ask you, is there a point where Washington says, okay, we got to pick up the phone and see if Terry and his camp are just stuck right here and they're not budging and we don't want to give him that? Our only recourse really is we pick up the phone and we try to make a trade. Is that even a possibility? So, or what? I know it's not now, but
but then the other team's got to pay him.
Right.
Thank you. Right there, Andrew. Thank you. That part of the variables in this, no other team wants to pay Terry McLaurin $30 plus million a season either. They just don't. And I don't mean this as like disrespecting him at all. He's a very, very good receiver. It's just the economics at that position have created this tier, this top tier at $35 to $40 million that is wreaking havoc because everyone's trying to figure out who's in that next tier, how big is that next tier, and then who kind of gets pushed down to the third tier, where are they at in terms of their age? And again, DK Metcalf, you're talking about a guy, you know, what signs the deal, you're at 27, 28. You have a few years left where you should be, you know, in your prime. Terry McLaurin keeps himself in great shape. I have no doubt he's going to continue to be a very good football player for the next few years. And he's more of a technician than necessarily an athlete, if you compare him to, say, DK Metcalf. But, you know, all that said, you can't trade him if no other team wants to pay him either. And I think back to the 49ers situation where they were at the stalemate with Brandon Ayuk, and you know, Ayuk did not ultimately want to do the deal at the numbers that the 49ers wanted. So the 49ers said, fine, shop yourself. Go ahead, go out there and see what money you can get elsewhere. And he did. And he found out, I can get the money in Cleveland, I can get the money in New England, and I can get the money in Pittsburgh. And the 49ers said, do you want to play for any of those three organizations, or do you want to remain here? If you want to remain here, we will work out the money and we'll figure out a way to resolve this. Now, I think the 49ers, you can argue they lost that negotiation because I think they moved far more than they wanted to with Ayuk. But it is sort of a similar situation where if you're the Commanders, you want to trade. Okay, well, who's going to pay you? I mean, I think that is the part of the question there that you have to put to Terry McLaurin. You can ask for a trade, but someone, you have to know who out there wants to pay you the money you ultimately want. And if they don't, why not stay here and let's work it out?
And if you have a quarterback on a rookie contract and you went to the NFC Championship game a year ago and you want to win right now, you need Terry McLaurin. You do.
Yeah, absolutely.
You need him as your one. He turns 30 the Monday of week 3. And you talk about getting back on the field and getting up to speed. The early schedule's not easy. They get the Giants week 1, then the quick turnaround. They are at Lambeau week 2 on Thursday Night Football. So if you're not in football shape, if you're not ready to go, that is a quick turnaround week 2, just days before your 30th birthday. No Terry McLaurin, I have no doubt he will be ready. And as I said, I'm kind of rooting a deal gets done because I think you kind of do deserve some pay for past performance here, although it's really hard, as Adam Peters or any GM will tell you, to run a business that way. Speaking of trades, what would Micah Parsons bring? And remember, you'd have to pay the guy as well. Coming up, we'll give you that answer and tell you what Jerry Jones said today about Micah. That is next on Inside Coverage on Yahoo. Inside coverage here on Yahoo, the how and the why of everything going on in the NFL here, officially the dog days of training camp, not just because here in Philadelphia or anywhere up and down the East Coast, you walk outside at, 7:10 Eastern, and it feels like there is a wet blanket being thrown over you. It's just the dog days of training camp. Let's get to the season. And let's get Micah Parsons on the field if you're a Dallas Cowboys fan. Here is what Jerry Jones said today walking off the field in Oxnard. Another day in which Parsons did not practice, but he was somewhere near the fields. Asked if there is a deadline. This is from Todd Archer at ESPN. Whether Micah would play September 4th against the Eagles. Jerry Jones said, no, not at all. You don't have deadlines when you're playing under a contract. In other words, dude, not only are you under contract, oh, by the way, I have 2 franchise tag years if I really want to use them. Charles Robinson, it was August 1st, if memory serves, when Micah Parsons hit send on a 3-page iPhone notes post saying, see ya, I'm out of here. Are we any closer to a resolution? Because I cannot believe he's going to get traded.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine him getting traded. So I, you know, as I've gone through the tour, I've now gotten to the point where I've had 4 general managers who have kind of assessed his trade value, and then 3 other front office executives. And, you know, the baseline is pretty clear, and there's a lot of agreement on it. You know, bare minimum, you go back to the 2018 trade, where the Raiders sent Khalil Mack to the Chicago Bears for 2 first-round picks, a 3rd-round pick. I think Mack went over with a 2nd-round pick, only richer. So you start, if that's going to be the basement, and then really the assessment is, if you're the Cowboys, you're asking for bare minimum 2 first-round picks and a quality starter as well. You're going to get another player coming back who's going to help you immediately. And if not a quality starter, you're going to ask for 3 first-round picks, and that's really the realm you're going to have to deal in, and then pay Micah Parsons $45 million a year, annual average value. That's what you would ultimately be signing up for. But I'll throw this at you. I thought this was pretty interesting. I was sitting with a GM, and he told me he had had a conversation with the Cowboys. He had called. It was not about Micah, but he kind of nosed around a little bit just to kind of get a feel for, you know, what they wanted to talk about when it came to Micah. And he said, I didn't get any sense. Ultimately, they want to deal him. If anything, it was, you know, the opposite. They seem very calm about the situation, the way it was going. So I'll ask you guys this. Jerry's got a Netflix program coming up, right? And he's the master of promotion. And he has said in the past, mm-hmm. Jerry has said, when it gets quiet, I like to stir it up a little bit. Like when it gets quiet around our team, and all of us, I spent 25 years around NFL teams, and all I hear is we want it to be quiet. And he's on the other end of the spectrum. It gets quiet, he gets itchy, right? Like he wants to get thrown out of an Applebee's when it gets quiet. That's Jerry Jones. So is there a chance, and it was funny because the general manager posed this to me. He said at one point, is there any shot they know they're going to pay him? They know we're going to pay him $45 million a season. We're going to trump all the numbers. But is there a chance that Jerry is doing this to keep the Cowboys constantly talked about leading into this Netflix series that's coming out about Jerry wow. Jones? And at the time, I was like, nah, I'm like, he's pretty crazy. I'm like, but I don't think he would do this. And you know, you're like, you know, what, Micah, wouldn't Micah have to be in on that? No, Micah wouldn't. Because if the Cowboys sit there and go, we write checks all the time that heal feelings, and we know how to do that. Let's go ahead and go through this and earn as much publicity as we possibly can. This is Jerry Jones. This is a theory. And at
do
the end
you
of the day,
believe
I
this, Charles? Come on.
It would be the craziest thing I had ever seen.
But if one guy's going to pull it off, it's do. Jerry, right?
But if one guy is going to sit there and go.
What if Jerry says, all right, here's the number. I know this is the number, and I'm just waiting, and I'll give you the number like in 2 weeks. And then Micah goes, yeah, you know what? I don't want that number anymore. Like, I really do want to get traded.
Today's price like, is you, not you... yesterday's price.
Right. So hey, I went to the premiere of the Netflix show in LA on Monday. By the way, it's going to be pretty cool. It's not just about Jerry. It's about the franchise. We screened episode 3, which is an amazing flashback to the 1992 NFC Championship game, that muddy day in San Francisco where the Cowboys kind of ended the team of the 80s there that the Niners had been with the dynasty. So well done. But Jerry was up on stage after the screening, and they did a round table, a crosstalk. Al Michaels moderated. It was Jerry and Michael Irvin and Emmett Smith and the two filmmakers. And Jerry, Charles, to your point, said exactly what you said about stirring it up, and basically any headline's a good headline as long as they spell our name right, right? Controversy is a good thing. Controversy moves the needle. Controversy, or just a little bit of tension, is a good thing. However, when jokes are made about Emmett Smith's holdout, right? His legendary holdout many a year ago, Jerry, when given the opportunity a few times to say something about Micah, would not go there. And Micah Parsons today told reporters, I have no comment. I will not comment. I'm not going to comment. So I think both can be true. Like, I guarantee it. Yes, that has crossed his mind. But the idea that he would actually, Frank, do it, I just can't buy it.
I love this conspiracy so much because Jerry Jones is the one guy who is like, Charles, you talked about this. We've talked about this. 31 teams, 31 owners are like, don't create any controversy. Keep everything quiet. There's one guy out there is like, yeah, I'll tell you what you need to know. I don't care. And by the way, there's one franchise in sports in the world that's worth $10 billion. It's the team that hasn't won a Super Bowl in 30 years. Jerry Jones is running circles around everybody else when it comes to promotion, right? He's the carnival barker, okay? This is what he does. Although I don't really believe it, but it's Jerry. I can't rule it out either. Okay. It's so phenomenal. I love that you brought this up. I love it.
So let me add this to this. So, Andrew, you went and you screened the documentary. It literally mm-hmm. has The Gambler in the title of the documentary.
Correct.
So if there's anybody who loves to point out how he gambled his way to this and that, the chances he took, how he hung it out there and couldn't keep the lights on. I've been there for how many, you know, his monologues where he goes on and on about the beginnings and, you know, talks about
the $100 million win on that last oil well when he threw Absolutely. Everything in and that he had it. Nothing left. Yep.
Okay, so you have that guy, right? And let's be realistic. Had they signed Micah at the outset of camp or before camp, how much would we have talked about the Cowboys? We would have been like, oh, we would have just talked about normal football stuff. How's Tyler Booker look?
This is so good.
How does, you know, what would we, oh, you know, what's Dak look like?
Yeah,
you know,
I'm going to talk about Tyler Booker a lot, right?
Instead, what has happened? He has the Cowboys, Micah says something, or Jerry says something, or Steven says something, and every single morning show for weeks on end, what? It has been in the mainstream. We're talking about it right now.
Listen,
on a podcast. I know. Okay.
And but we would still be talking about them some way.
Not, but like, Andrew, you have to admit, not on this level, right? Number one.
And no, number two, not on this level. The conversation would be, what is Dak Prescott's legacy? Like, shut up. It's August. Stop. Like, right. I hate that. But yes, having worked at the network, and I love my 13 years of the network, but this isn't just NFL Network. It's ESPN. It's every network. It is the Cowboys Industrial Complex. You know you must talk about them no matter what it is. Oh, yeah. Every single day. And for the fans who say we're sick of it, I get it. But I can tell you that I have seen the numbers. If the Cowboys were to cut their long snapper, whose name escapes me right now, I'm sorry. But if they were to cut their long snapper tomorrow, other than Shador, which now has that power, it would probably be the number one story on the stack on the front of NFL.com. And those stories, they used to be, and I think they still are, their order on the page is dictated by how many clicks they get. So very often, like, you click on a bunch of stories, like, one of them will float to the top. The Cowboys and the Steelers stories will always be at the top. Always, okay. Always, 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 always. So when you yell at me, not you, meaning the fans, saying stop talking about the Cowboys, I'm telling you, they move the needle and the ratings are different. And everything is different when they are being discussed.
Fair enough. But when has there ever been a Jerry Jones documentary coming out in the middle of it in which he was followed around for 3 years by a crew? This is different.
I get it.
I'll just say one other thing. It sounds insane and it sounds crazy. And yet the first time I ever went to Frisco, I stood there and said, oh my God, what the hell is going on? There's thousands and thousands of office square footage that watches your practice every day. What is going on? Like, who on the face of the earth would go, well, I know I can fill up all those thousands and thousands and 10,000 and all the floors of square footage because they can just watch the Cowboys practice every day and I'll make them sign a waiver that says they can't share any of that. I mean, it's brilliant. Kind of fits.
Now I have a new favorite thing, and it's Charles doing an entire podcast as Jerry Jones. Can we get that?
That's fantastic.
Can we just do an hour of Charles as Jerry?
Go ask Mike McCarthy or Jason Garrett about all the times they, hey, by the way, practice on Friday? Yeah, you can't do it. Why? Because there's a bar mitzvah in there on the field. What? No, oh, yeah, there's a wedding.
Team operating
what?
Like, unlike any other. The Cowboys are
we sold out the bubble
other.
Today.
Again, they're the only $10 billion franchise in the world. Maybe Jerry's figured out something everybody else hasn't. It's an entertainment.
He has figured it out. And by the way, the documentary is truly, really good. And you talk about like Jerry talking a lot. Yes, he does. We all know that. And I'm talking too much right now. I'm getting yelled at. We should break. But they have 40 hours of interviews with Jerry for this doc. 40 hours. They mentioned that during the talk after the screening. Anyway, coming up next, some injury updates from around the NFL. Matthew Stafford, Chop Robinson. And today was a day to throw down at training camp. We have the tail of the tape and your fight updates coming up next on Inside Coverage. It's Inside Coverage, everybody. Andrew Siciliano, Frank Schwab, Charles Robinson. You're watching live on Yahoo. We're going to be here 6:30 Eastern every evening. You know, there have been a couple of times over the summer where you hear of players carted off and you fear the worst. Landon Dickerson, for example, in Philadelphia, you fear the worst, carted off. It's, fingers crossed, only going to be a month. Chop Robinson had one of those today. Lions-Dolphins joint practice and the second-year defensive end, the guy that used to play with Abdul Carter at Penn State, gets carted off. Nice rookie season, 6 sacks. You fear the worst. The good news is Chop then went to the IG later in the day and said, I am going to be okay, which is good news certainly there for a Dolphins team that who knows how good they're going to be, but it would be nice if they had him. Meantime, in L.A., Rams didn't have much of a practice today, more of a jog through, a walk through as was scheduled. Matthew Stafford was not seen out there in the portion of practice open to the media. Sean McVay didn't talk. Matt LaFleur did, or Mike LaFleur, I beg your pardon. No real update right now on Matthew Stafford. And then, gentlemen, we have the fights. You don't go near Joe Burrow during practice. He survived that first quarter, throwing 2 touchdowns last Thursday to beat the Eagles. He wants to play in the preseason. Shamar Stewart, now that you're in practice, don't go near Joe Burrow. That's what happened today. He was twisting inside. He was kind of losing his footing. And he didn't dive at Joe Burrow's knees, but losing his footing and going to the ground, he hit the quarterback. And then they went at it. No real punches thrown, but the offensive line got up in Shamar Stewart's face, and they defended their quarterback. You talk about the most Bengal thing ever, Frank, if this had happened. Like, Joe Burrow survives the preseason after demanding. I'm convinced Zach didn't want to play him, but Joe Burrow announced he was playing, and so Zach had to go, okay, good, you're playing. Got it.
Right.
If this had actually happened in practice where this was an injury, I mean, good gosh.
Yeah, I even as somebody who is a connoisseur of baseball fights, training camp fights, I love it all. I'm here for the bloodlust. I'm fine with that. Yes, don't hit the quarterback, son. Like, don't. Like, you're a rookie, especially. I don't care if you're a first-round pick. That guy wearing number 9, yeah, don't even get close to him. Don't breathe on him anymore. And good for the offensive lineman for standing up for Joe and getting in a fight there. They should. They should absolutely be like, rookie, what the heck do you think you're doing?
Of all the guys, right? Like, of all the guys, yes, for this to happen with. And that's what makes it so Bengals. You're like, this guy, you know, holds out forever. You finally get him in, and he's on the field. And then he almost hurts Joe Burrow. And he's it's not funny, but man, it's, yeah, you have
to. No, it's not funny because he's not hurt, but it is funny now. It is pretty. Know that Joe's okay. It's pretty funny.
Oh, my goodness.
Meantime, there was also a bit of a skirmish here. The Falcons and the Titans, there was a deep ball, Michael Penix to Ray-Ray McCloud, and then evidently some chirping after that. And players went at it a little bit, and Penix got right in the middle of it. Michael Penix, guys, got thrown down. He says he's okay, right? He's fine. He talked afterwards. Nobody got hurt. Hey, if I'm a Falcons player, look, there's my quarterback getting in the scrap. Like Mike Vrabel last week, getting in the scrap, coming away bloodied. Although Vrabel loves to get in the scrap. He loves to get the pads out and get,
between my 50-some-year-old coach jumping in. He ain't got to play on Sundays. Michael, stay out of this, okay? The quarterback can't be getting in any fights.
I don't mind it, because years ago, like, Pedro Martinez used to throw at people and then benches would empty and he would stand there in the dugout laughing, giggling while guys had to go fight because he was headhunting. So not that Michael Penix was headhunting, but I don't mind the guy getting into the middle of it. Right. That's leadership right there. Just be careful. Like, don't get hurt.
No, you have an intern who was assigned. And if it looks like the quarterback's going to fight anyone, the intern immediately steps in as the pugilist. So you just go out and you find like a 6'4", 260-pound intern. Yes, someone who played hockey. And you bring them in, and they're automatically subbed in the second it looks like your quarterback.
It's like a game of – was that a Game of Thrones thing where, like, you know, the king doesn't fight. Get someone else to go fight for the king, right?
Choose your fighter.
And yes, choose your fighter. And by the way, there's a tweet on the screen there from the reporter – Miles Garrett with an I, not a Y, in Cincinnati or Atlanta, I beg your pardon. Not actually the Miles Garrett with a Y, who looked unstoppable as always today here in Philadelphia. Guys, it's been fun. This is another edition of Inside Coverage. We are back tomorrow as the training camp tour continues. We will have a look ahead to week 2 of the preseason. For Frank Schwab and Charles Robinson, I'm Andrew Siciliano. This is Inside Coverage. Again, 6:30 Eastern Time every day. Gentlemen, it's been fun. Go buy your Taylor Swift album, and we will see you tomorrow.